Before we study the passages that have to do with marriage and divorce, it's very important that we define terms. And so in these first few lessons, we have been looking at words, four words particularly, four terms that are critical to understanding the topic when we read the verses. One is the word marriage. A relationship between a man and a woman entered into by covenant and sexual consummation. Even the word covenant is open to misunderstanding, so we had one class just on the word covenant and what that entails. And then the word divorce. What is a divorce? Is it something that occurs at the courthouse? Does it require legal papers? So we looked at the word divorce as it's used in the Bible, not as men define it today. We know that people who are married have one reason Jesus gave that they could put away their mate and marry again, that is for the cause of adultery. But what is adultery? And so we spent a class looking at that word as it's used in the Bible, not as you would find it in a dictionary today or in common discourse with a fellow person, but rather how it's used in Scripture. It's very critical. And then we looked at the word tonight, fornication. That's what we're looking at tonight. So let's address ourselves to the study. Now, if you're visiting with us, the way we've tried to define these words, we have not went to a lexicon. Lexicons are okay. They can be useful. One, lexicons can be misused. Lexicons are not only lexicons, they are also commentaries, and often people don't realize that. Number two, if I say the lexicon says, and you don't have one, you have to depend on what I tell you and whether or not I'm using it correctly. So what we've done is try to define the words by contextual usage, that anybody with a Bible that can read can look at the context and see, here's what the word means in its context. That's what we've done, and that's what we're going to do tonight as we look at the word fornication. And that's why we're beginning our study in Ezekiel 16, not because we're looking at the Old Testament law of marriage, but because here's a passage that helps us to define the term that we're looking at tonight, fornication. You'll see at the top of your lesson, fornication is unlawful sexual intercourse in general. We'll talk more about that as we go through the study. Adultery is also unlawful sexual intercourse, but it involves at least one party who is bound by law to someone else. We talked about that in the previous class, last class, Romans chapter 7. But the word fornication can include adultery, as we'll see in a moment, but it's a broader word and can refer to unlawful sexual intercourse in general, where neither party has ever been married and is not bound to any other partner. All right, so let's see if that's correct. Let's look at Ezekiel chapter 16 and verse 26. We've encouraged you to compare versions when you study that can be very helpful. Obviously, the translators of our Bibles, the major versions, the King James, 47 scholars, the American Standard, 101 scholars. Then you have the New American Standard and the New King James, and the ESV, and all of these were translated by panels of scholars. And so we have in our hands some wonderful tools, and it's helpful to compare these. One of the advantages of comparing is that the King James Version was originally translated in 1611, and we don't use those words anymore, many of them. Even the version you're using, if you're using King James, is 1779. So the American Standard of 1901 was an excellent translation, maybe the best one out there as far as being literal. But again, it's somewhat dated and often difficult for people to read because it is so literal. So you have the New American Standard, which is based on the American Standard, and then you have the New King James, which is based on the King James, but striving to incorporate what's been learned about the languages and what's available for understanding the text. So all of these are very helpful. We encourage you to compare versions. If you use the English Standard Version, be particularly cautious because, whereas the other versions I've mentioned italicize the words they add, the English Standard Version does not. And so that's a danger. You may be thinking the writer wrote these words when they're not there. So just a caution about using the English Standard Version. All right, we're looking at Ezekiel chapter 16 and verse 26. We note on the lesson the King James Version and the American Standard Version translate the first part of verse 26, committed fornication. You committed fornication with the Egyptians. What do you mean, committed fornication? That's what we're looking at tonight. What kind of action does that phrase indicate? So you can compare the New American Standard, the New King James, or the English Standard Version. How do they translate that phrase? Played the harlot or engaged in harlotry. The English Standard Version says played the whore. The New King James Version says committed harlotry. So we know what a harlot is. We know what committing harlotry is. We know what it is to be involved with a whore. That tells you what committed fornication in these other two versions means. It's not a difference. Sometimes you see a difference in version that's based on a difference in manuscripts. That's not the case here. It's simply a different way that the translators have tried to represent that Hebrew word in our language. And so these two translators, King James, American Standard, chose the phrase committed fornication. And these other three have either used the word harlotry or played the whore. So that gives you a clear idea of what fornication, committed fornication, means when you read that in the King James or the American Standard Version. Now, you may think everybody knows what fornication is. Fact is, they do not. And that is probably the reason that your later versions don't use it, because most people in our, I say most, a number of people in our society are not familiar with that word. You've probably heard me tell the story, if you've been here very long, about a man. He was a very worldly man and became a Christian, with quotes around it, but thought he was a Christian anyway. And he was, it changed his life. And so he was at a motel with a girl, and he's reading his Bible. And he came across that word, fornication. He didn't know what that meant. So he got dressed and went and found a preacher. Said, "What does this mean?" He said, "What you're doing." Guy didn't know. And so translators have tried to choose a word that may better represent it. Now, the New American Standard, down at the bottom of your a page, I've got a footnote about the New American Standard. It's chosen in several verses, and it's not consistent how it translates it. Why, I don't know. But it often translates it immorality. If you look at the Matthew 15 text, the footnote there, it'll say sexual immorality. If you look at the Colossians 3:5 text, it'll tell you literally fornication. That's in the marginal notes. That's always good to consult. But immorality is not a bad translation, except that it's so broad. Is murder moral or immoral? Murder's immoral, isn't it? Is kidnapping immoral? Yes. But murder and kidnapping is not fornication. And so, in trying to help the English reader, I'm not so sure, but what they've broadened it too wide. So, the New King James Version often uses sexual immorality, which is probably an improvement. So just be aware of that when you see that word immorality. Okay? All right, look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Again, if we're letting context define a word, this is an excellent passage. An excellent passage. I told you to turn to 1 Corinthians 6. Go back to Ezekiel 16 for just a moment. I want to show you something else there that I don't have on the lesson. Look at 25. I think we talked about this in a previous class, but if you weren't here for that class, verse 25. He says, you spread your legs to every passerby to multiply your harlotry. You can clearly see what kind of action he's talking about by that translation. Okay, 1 Corinthians 6, also very helpful in defining the word. Beginning in verse 12 through verse 20, he's discussing fornication. The discussion actually begins back in chapter 5 because they had a man in the congregation who was committing fornication. He was living with his father's wife, or you might say adultery. And so he tells them what to do with the fornicator in chapter 5, that is, to be removed from their midst. Chapter 6, the first few verses, diverts the talk about, are there any wise men there to help handle this situation? But then in verse 12, he's still on that topic of this sexual uncleanness that was being practiced in the congregation. And Corinth was a city known for the promiscuity that was practiced there and the lack of sexual restraint. And it seems like when you read verse 12 through 20, that some of the Corinthians were still under the impression you could be a Christian and practice these things. Now, you wouldn't think you would have to argue the rightness or wrongness of fornication with Christians, but Paul does in verse 12 through 20. Isn't that interesting? That he's got to convince these Christians that fornication is sinful, and that's what he does in verse 12 through 20. There was an element that was rising at the time these letters were written called Gnosticism, a movement. And it took two branches, and one was called licentious Gnosticism. And what it said was that what's important is what you know, the mind, not what you do with your body. You can do anything you want with your body. You can go commit fornication. It's okay. The body doesn't count. It's what you know. The word Gnosticism comes from the word knowledge. And they say that's the important thing. So it's very likely that Paul is combating this licentious Gnosticism that was permeating churches. You read about it, Gnosticism here. You see shades of it in chapter 8. You see it in the Colossian letter. You see it in 1 John. And so it was a movement that was affecting Christians. And you see responses to it in various letters. So you have this dialogue that Paul represents this defender of fornication making these arguments, and then he answers them in verse 12 through verse 20, an understanding dialogue and much help with this particular section of Scripture. But anyway, you can very clearly see that he's talking about fornication. If you look in the text here, I've got verse 12 through 20. I've revised that a little bit to try to make it more specific. If you look at verse 13, he said, the body is not for immorality. That's the New American Standard Version. Your word may say fornication, may say sexual immorality, but that's our word. Down in verse 15, he talks about taking your members of your body and making them members of a harlot. We remember in Ezekiel 16, that's the way that phrase was translated in three of the versions. In verse 16, he says, whoever joins himself to a harlot is one body with her. So that's the kind of practice or action that's engaged in what we call harlotry. Verse 18, flee immorality. Every sin that a man commits is outside the body, but the immoral man sins against his own body. So clearly the context is about immorality or fornication. What is that? Well, it's pretty clear, isn't it? When we look through the context, one of the things we ask you, we've got the verses here, verse 15, 16, 18, 19, and 20. Whatever this act is, clearly employs what? The body. The body. This is not something you just think about. It's not something that happens at the courthouse. Well, they file papers because they're in love with somebody else. They committed fornication. That's not fornication. Fornication is something you do with your body. So you see that in verse 13. The body is not for immorality. You see that in verse 15. Your bodies are to be members of Christ. That is, Christ is to govern how you use your body. Verse 16. Joins himself to harlots, one body with her. And then verse 18. Talks about sinning against your body. In verse 19, your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. And verse 20, an encouragement to glorify God in your body. How you use your body should always be in accord with the will of the God we serve. Immorality is not that kind of thing. So it's therefore forbidden. We understand that clearly. Again, it's interesting that he has to write to the Corinthian church with these argumentations. To convince them and to confirm the fact they have no business engaging in that practice. In the old city of Corinth, fornication was a religious act. You go to the temple. That's how you worshiped. And so it would take that connotation with people, but it's sinful. Today, the way people covered up is they call it free love. They're not bound by any rules. They're just in love. Well, that's just Satan's efforts to cover over sin. He uses other terms. But what the Bible calls it is fornication or sexual immorality. All right, so we've already looked at verse 15 and 16. It's described as something you do with a harlot or with a prostitute. Some versions will say harlot, some will say prostitute. So we know what that act is, and therefore this text, verse 12 through 20, is so clear in defining what we're talking about when we talk about, or when the Bible talks about, not what people necessarily today talk about, what the Bible means when it talks about fornication. All right, any comments, questions so far? All right, let's look at Revelation. I've got the wrong verse. Some of you already figured that out on your lesson. On your lesson, it says Revelation 3. It is not Revelation 3. It is Revelation 2. And at the end of that question, I had verse 23 on your lesson. It's verse 22. And if you did the lesson, you immediately saw that there was something wrong with the lesson, which if you've been in my classes very much, you probably expect that. make a lot of typos, but be that as it may. If you ever see one of these, email me, text me, and I'll be glad to look at it and see what mistake I've made. Okay, so here's Revelation chapter 2. We'll start in verse 20. And you can see he's writing to the church at Thyatira. Now, isn't it interesting? 1 Corinthians is to the church of God at Corinth. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 2. And here's this whole section on fornication. Here is a letter to the church at Thyatira. And look what he's addressing. Fornication. And there are churches today who tolerate fornication. And that's a problem with Thyatira. Let's look at it. He starts in verse 20. Let him start in 19. I know your deeds and your love and faith and service and perseverance, and that your deeds are later greater than at the first. Jesus is very objective. He recognized the good things. When Paul wrote Corinth, he commended them for some things, while at the same time, he was very hard in his reproof of their shortcomings. But here you see there's a commendation. But then he says in verse 20, I have this against you, that you tolerate. In our society, toleration, your verb may say suffer or allow. We're proud of the fact we tolerate. You need to be tolerant. Well, some things yes, some things no. So aren't you a Christian? Be tolerant. Well, a Christian is not tolerant of everything. Look at the text. It said, I have this against you that you tolerate. And so he said, you tolerate the woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess, and she teaches and leads my bondservants astray so that they commit acts of immorality and eat things sacrificed to idols. I just mentioned that in the ancient city of Corinth, the old Corinth, that fornication was associated with idolatry. That's true in the Greek culture. That's part of the way that they practice their idolatrous worship. You can see there's a connection here at Thyatira. It seems to be, at least. Now, our question on your lesson is, those practicing fornication or immorality in verse 20 and 21 were said to be practicing what in verse 22? What did verse 22 say they're practicing? Commit adultery. He hasn't changed topic. It's the fact that the word fornication and adultery sometimes are used interchangeably. Fornication, remember at the top of your lesson it says, in general. Sexual immorality in general. It's broader than the word adultery. Romans 7, we saw that what makes a person an adulteress is there is a living mate that they are bound to other than the one that they're having this sexual relationship with. And so that makes it adultery. And Romans 7 is an important text in the definition of that word. Fornication does not require that either party be bound to somebody else. One may, and this, then it can be called adultery. But fornication is a broader word. All right, so I have you on your lesson. If you weren't here or you're interested in going back and looking at that, you can go back to Romans 7, 1 through 4. That's class number 8. And if you weren't here, you can either listen on your device or download it to your device, the lesson, class 8, and listen to it. Very important lesson, Romans chapter 7, 1 through 4. In fact, I think I could say with confidence that if we don't understand Romans 7, 1 through 4, we're not going to understand the Bible teaching on marriage and divorce and remarriage. It's critical study. Okay. Any questions there? Comments? All right. Look at Jude 7. Jude 7. Our question is, Sodom and Gomorrah indulged in fornication or sexual immorality. And so this shows this word includes what kind of actions? How did you answer that? What? Homosexuality and lesbianism. That's right. And, in fact, it seems to indicate that the word would also include bestiality, lying with a beast. So it's a broader word than simply an action between a male and a female. It can be a male and a male, a female and a female, or a human with an animal. Let's look here at Jude 7. Just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them, since they are the same way as these, indulged in gross immorality. Sometimes when you read your Bible, you have a phrase that actually is a translation of one word. That's what you have here. Engage in or indulge in gross immorality is really one word. Hold your finger here and go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 6 for just a moment. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, that word that we looked at, immorality, is, if you put it in English letters, that Greek word would be porneia. In verse 15, make the members of a harlot That, if you put that in English letter, P-R-O-N-O. What word do we have that's similar to that?
Pornography.
That's where pornography comes from. So, porno, that's harlot. This other word is immorality. And now, when you get over here to Jude, you have that word, but with a little attachment on the front. Two letters they added to it. What are the two letters on the front that they put on here? It intensifies it. It raises it to another level. You can go check this out if you want to, if you're interested in it. But the translations indicate that. And that's why you have this translation, not just indulge in immorality, but the translator's trying to convey to the English reader this word said indulged in gross immorality. They went to another level. Now, the word and. The word and in the Bible does not always mean one and two. Two different things, like we might count them. The word and has a number of significations. Sometimes it's adversity, it means but. But sometimes it's what's called ascensive. Ascensive means it raises whatever was before it, again, to another level. It's explanatory, but on an even higher level. So, here you have it. He said, indulged in gross immorality, and, is this something different? Two things? No, it's the same thing. Even went after strange flesh. Hold your finger here and go to Romans chapter 1. In Romans chapter 1, and in verse 26. God gave them over to degrading passions, for the woman exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. If it's not natural, what word in Jude could refer to something unnatural?
Strange.
It's strange. It's not right. Something wrong with it. Unnatural. All right? Unnatural. Now, what is he talking about? Go to 27. In the same way, now he turns to the male, the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire toward one another. That's unnatural. Men with men committing indecent acts. So hetero refers to different sexual, heterosexuality. Two different genders having sex, male and female. Homo, same sex, male, male, female, female. That's homosexuality. When you talk about women, it's called lesbianism. And so here you see that it's unnatural. All right, this is Romans 1. And you read it's unnatural. Where would you go to find out what is natural? The natural function of the woman and the man.
Genesis
1 and 2. Genesis 2 primarily. The man was alone. So God made him a helper meet, fitting, answering to him. What did he make? Could he have made another man?
Yes.
He could have, but he didn't. He made a woman. Made a woman. Brought her to the man. And then you have that law that Jesus quoted, recorded in Genesis 2:24. For this cause what? Man shall do what? Leave his father and mother and cleave to his man?
Woman.
To his woman. His wife. And then you have a phrase at the end of that verse, they should become one flesh. We talked about this in a previous class, but since we're in 1 Corinthians, we've been looking at 1 Corinthians 6. Go back to that now. Paul quotes that very phrase in verse 16 of 1 Corinthians 6. What kind of action does he have in view when he quotes that phrase? Eating a good meal? Going to work in the morning? What kind of action? Sexual act. What you do with a harlot. So become one flesh, Genesis 2, is a wholesome sexual act between a man and a woman you covenanted with to be a companion for life. That's the married relationship. So over here in Jude, where we're studying, they went after strange flesh. Instead of a man wanting a man wanted a man. Well, it's exactly what we read about way back here in Genesis, is it not? When you go back to Genesis chapter 18 and 19, and you read about Sodom and Gomorrah, in chapter 19 and verse 5, the people came to Lot. Remember, he had allowed these two men to his home for that night. They said, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may have relations with them." There it is, men wanting to have sexual relationship with men. That's going after strange flesh. That's homosexuality. Now, what's interesting in Jude is that he uses our word, but intensifies it. The same word that's translated fornication in other places occurs here with this little added addition on the front, which indicates they use that word to include more than a man sleeping with a woman who he's not married to, or just two people unmarried sleeping together. They used it also of men with men and women with women. And so that's what we talk about, what we get our term sodomy. And so you can see God's attitude toward it here in verse 7. Exhibited an example undergoing the punishment of eternal fire. Look back at Leviticus chapter 20. Leviticus 20, where laws are being given for the nation of Israel. Note in verse 10, we talked about this in a previous class. You may remember this. We were looking at the term adultery and seeing the contextual definition. If there's a man who commits adultery with another man's wife, in verse 11, instead of using commit adultery, what does he say? Lies with. Also, in verse 10, another man's wife. But what's his partner in verse 11? Father's wife. More specific. Verse 12, who's his partner? Daughter-in-law. Same action, see? When you get to 13, what is he describing? Homosexuality. Same action in all the verses, but different partners. And just as sure as lying with your father's wife is sinful, your daughter-in-law, sinful, homosexuality is sinful. And it's an offensive case because you're going after strange flesh. Look down at verse 15. There's a man who lies with an animal. Here's bestiality. So you got the whole range way back here in Leviticus. Where's all this based? Where's the foundation of the right thinking about who you lie with? Genesis 2. When God created this relationship. Right? And all of that's contrary to it. Does God expect people to read Genesis 2 and reach some practical applications about what you can and cannot do today?
Yes.
Prove it. I agree. Prove it.
Well, when they ask if it's lawful for a man to divorce his wife, he said, "Have you not read?"
That's right. When they asked Jesus, Matthew 19, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Does the word divorce occur in Genesis 2? No. But that's where he took them. Read your Bible, he said. That's a paraphrase. Have you not read? Draw some conclusions from that. If I can draw the conclusion that it's not right to separate from my wife or husband, surely I can understand it's not right to lie with a man or a woman to lie with a woman. It's all there in Genesis 2. All right, so Jude shows that this word we're talking about can include homosexuality and lesbianism. A practical application. When you think of a real practical application today when we talk about marriage and divorce, okay, so a man finds out his wife is having sexual relationship with another woman. Can he divorce her for fornication, Matthew 19:9, and be free to marry?
Yes.
She hasn't had relation with another man, but with another woman. I agree, Sally, yes. Yes. Fornication, if I understand the word, includes that. So it has a very practical application, especially in our society. Unfortunately, there have been even Christians who face that with their mate, find out they're homosexual or lesbian. Can they divorce them? Yes. Yes. Any questions, comments?
Steve?
Yes, sir.
Sometimes we say that sin is sin.
Say what?
Sometimes people say that all sin is bad, evil. Of course it is. Sometimes we might want to put sin at different levels, like worse sin, and then we might have lying, maybe a little bit lower. It seems based on the Jude 1:7, it seems like God has especially this case for homosexuality, the words he's using and what he did in Sodom and Gomorrah.
Right.
For some reason, he, of all sin, that one to him is extremely wicked.
Good point. Yeah. We say all sin is the same in the sense that it's a violation of the will of God, and therefore every one of us is guilty when we commit it. But there is a difference in how God looks at different sin, as God looks at it. For example, there's one sin God would never, ever tolerate at all. What is it? Idolatry. He would not tolerate idolatry. God permitted, I don't know why he did, polygamy. Never was, as far as I know, pleasing to him. But he would not permit idolatry. And as Rocky's noted, it seems like this particular kind of sexual sin is particularly grievous. So it's a good point that Rocky makes. All right, let's go to Colossians chapter 3. Verse 5. So here, who's this letter written to?
Colossians.
Are they Christians?
Yes.
So you say, well, Christians know what to stay away from. Really? Surely, immorality, they know that. But look at verse 5. Consider the members of your earthly body as dead too. What's the first thing listed? The very thing we're talking about tonight. Immorality, or sexual immorality, your version may say fornication. Isn't it interesting, the Corinthian letter? Here, the Colossian letter. Roman letter talks about it. Jude talks about it. You know, letter after letter talks about these kinds of sins that Christians are to stay away from. So immorality, and then the other four words, are things that are associated with immorality, either impurity, the things that lead to it and encourage it, Do the next three words have to do with the heart, the desire for it, the passion that's stirred, and then it becomes so intense in one's heart, it's like covetousness, not for money, but for sex. It becomes a god. And so all that's condemned. But now note what he said in verse 6, and here's our question. It says, on account of these things, the wrath of God will come. That's interesting, isn't it? I thought God was a loving God. He is, but he's also a wrathful God. And what we have sometimes a caricature of God. People would only emphasize one part of God, not the other part. Caricature. So here in verse 6, on account of these things, the wrath of God will come. And in them you also once walked. What does walked mean? You lived in them. Look at the next phrase. When you were living in them. All right. Now, if you were living in these things, we ask the question, what does it mean to say you're living in them?
It was their lifestyle. They participated. They practiced.
They practiced it. That's right. You lived in these things. Look at verse 8. Put them all aside. If you live in anger and wrath, does that mean you got mad one time a few years ago? It's a repeated action, is it? And malice and slander and abusive speech. Same is true with immorality. It's a repeated action when you live in it. People say, you can't live in fornication. Yes, you can. You can't live in adultery. Adultery was committed when I remarried this other woman I shouldn't have had. I did it one time and it's over. No, every time you sleep with her, it's adultery. You live in it because you do it again and you do it again and you do it again. That's living in it. You can live in these sins by repeating them over and over again. All right, our time is up for tonight. Our next class, if the Lord is willing that we have it, we began to talk about passages. So we've been defining terms. What we're going to do now is start plugging those definitions in. We're going to go start reading passages that actually deal with our topic of study and then see if we can understand what those passages mean with the right definitions of the words that were employed. Okay, thank you very much.